Well, good evening and welcome along to the Trippers Pod. We've had a load of shitey fucking issues with internet and all that crap. We basically hate each other tonight. There's been a few scraps. Neil has gone home with two black eyes and a broken leg. Well, he came in with a broken leg, so he's now got two broken legs going home. Anyway, up next in the next... this thing drags on and on and on. I hated being here. I hate Liverpool fans. I hate Liverpool Football Club. I hate everything to do with podcasts, but hell and ever, we're still here. So anyway, up next, oh yeah, as ever, big thanks to skillzone.ie for sponsoring the podcast. We couldn't do it without their help and their sponsorship. And the War Games is in planning at this moment in time. And here's the advertisement for the Skillzone.
So, Kevin, what would you say your main skills are?
Rugby, soccer, Gaelic, tennis, climbing, basketball, shooting, golf, baseball, and hanging tough.
Test your sports skills at Skillzone, Ireland's first multi-sports indoor circuit. Be the first to get 100 points and you'll also win €10,000. Skillzone Sandyford. See skillzone.ie. T's and C's apply.
Okay, next up then is the podcast. We talk about Huddersfield, we talk about the disaster that was at the weekend, we talk about the implications that come out of the back end of it. And of course this week I've got Ray, I've got Neil, I've got Sean and I've got Andy.
Zone players. It has to be said. He can't say that. Well, what's he supposed to say?
Say nothing.
But sure, he's in the media spot.
He's not obligated to give. Turn around saying Mignolet.
Can I suggest
one.
He has we to take it outside for a straightener at this rate?
All I need is one good dick.
Okay. When I'm talking about the midfield, like Henderson, Chan, look, he can't replace them all. He's prioritised things. He's been unlucky with certain things as well. In the summer, he did want to. He did attempt to improve that midfield. He tried to buy Naby Keita. He would have improved that midfield.
Keita was sent off to
right?
We got him on the never.
He's fucking, yeah, he's a liability as well. He's getting sent off every week.
He just doesn't want to be there.
Anyway, so he did. It's not like he couldn't see that it needed to be done. It's not like he couldn't see that he needed a centre-half. He desperately, desperately wanted Van Dijk. Now, like, whatever's going on in the background, he probably still believes he can get Van Dijk because he hasn't given up on him.
Does that transfer is not going to happen 100%. So it happens now and Liverpool.
James Pearce said
James Pearce said at this current moment it's not. Right?
No, that's he what said James, it is 100%. When in Steve-O's interview, I edited it. He said 100% that transfer is not going to happen.
It took four weeks to get the interview.
How did you make him say that?
He said it's not going to happen. But we persevered with donkeys in Blackpool.
I don't know. I can't.
Only Liverpool could get caught in Blackpool, a holiday resort on the quiet.
Will I meet you at Newcastle or Hull or something? No, I tell you what. At the Waltzers. Nobody would do that.
So we get a 6'4" German guy to meet a 6'6" fella with long dreads, Dutch guy. Nobody will spot them. They'll be grand.
Okay.
And so don't wear your Liverpool jersey.
I can't remember exactly what, but I know James Pearce and a lot of the more reputable guys on Twitter were saying things like, at this current time, there's no...
Pearce categorically said that transfer is done, mate.
I've no real issue with us not getting Van Dijk. We could see that transfer was in the bag.
Yeah, well, I can't...
And then it went down. But we had...
And we issued a public apology to
him.
Force June.
Exactly.
If Klopp didn't believe that transfer was not going to happen, if there wasn't a single...
So do you admit it's poor planning still not having a backup?
It's the first time I'm totally blown away without explanation.
Yeah.
You know, to a situation. Like, to bring in Ox the week before, like, surely kind of... You know, a couple of days before, you know, right, this Van Dijk thing's not going to happen. Let's not buy Ox.
Every time I hear Van Dijk, I just want to go like that.
Maybe they'd made their commitment. I don't know. And let's buy a defender. I believe they needed two centre backs. Klopp has a lot more faith in his players and centre backs.
Okay. I want to get away from Van Dijk. I can't stand his name. I actually hope we never sign him. I genuinely hope we never sign him.
Chamberlain's real value is 80 million.
I hope he goes to Barcelona in January with Coutinho.
Probably, but.
I'm just sick of it, and hopefully like in the club can move on. Right, looking ahead.
Do we have to?
Okay, we don't have to look for a moment. But just looking at the sound bites that have come out, and going back to James Pearce, because James Pearce, Paul Joyce, it's not Tony Barrett anymore because he's got a job in the club, right? But they're all coming out and saying that there was a crisis meeting of the players and the management
on Monday.
And because it went really well, they got the day off. Right, yeah, so Tuesday. So because yeah, it went really well. They discussed the issues after the game.
Like in school,
PlayStation.
No school tomorrow, lads.
Yes, that was a really good meeting.
FIFA 2018.
Let's just forget about Sunday. Well, it was a
It was a recovery session on Monday, and a light recovery session, and then it was analysis. And
was it like an intervention? Was it? I've been to a few of them.
Carpool.
But I have a question around this, right? And I'm not getting at the idea of them getting a day off or whatever, because there's probably logic in terms of recovery and all that type of stuff.
Maybe there was a hurricane.
Run a game, two games in a week and that type of stuff, and bring them in ahead of the game. But like, every time a club hasn't got answers, in the news you always hear of crisis meetings and sorting things out.
Because that's what the news do. Like, it would be fairly boring if the news every day
surely
was,
they have a meeting every Monday.
People surely spoke.
Yeah.
So they go, din, 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 yeah. Crisis, big words, yeah. Excitement, sell papers. Like, I mean, what was discussed on a day after a fucking football match where they've lost? Teams don't generally train anyway. Like, well,
they're going,
it's all well, our defenders aren't training anyway, that's for sure.
Look, they had to do an analysis of the match. Now, the next bit that comes out of it is that they were happy with Klopp was happy with the sort of response from the players and the taking on the responsibility and the open words and the open discussion that they had around it, right? And then it starts to drift into, you know, the opinion piece, which you wonder how much of this is like I'm not going to say spun. But like, when they ask the questions off record and stuff like that, in terms of, are you going to drop Mignolet? Are you going to drop Lovren? You know, are you going to drop the defence out there? And his responses are probably coming back, well, I'm not going to tell you something directly, but he's probably saying, look, I still back these players. I still believe in these players. And they become the stories that come out in the paper today, which is that dropping these players is not necessarily the answer.
I don't think the journalists you're talking about specifically, Phil, are going to just feed us pure propaganda from the club.
No, I think so.
They do have a code of ethics and a moral duty to report as well as they possibly can. And their opinion is fact-based, so it does have some substance. And like you said, if an opinion hasn't got any fact involved in it, it's just words. So their opinion is very valuable. And if you can read between the lines,
after half an hour on Sunday. Yeah. And to be honest with you, when that did happen, I was kind of like, all right, well, maybe now we see sense, because that's something not normally would have done.
Yeah. I was happy at that moment in time, nothing to do with the player, nothing to do with, just purely because
we
made the change when the change was needed.
Yeah.
He usually goes up to 70 minutes, makes his change. That for me, it was previous, but at least, hopefully that shows he can deviate
I remember Mourinho hooking two Chelsea players in his second or third game after a half an hour, really
making a statement to the squad
saying you're not good enough anymore, and this is telling
everybody. I think
everybody.
It didn't matter when he went back the second
Mourinho,
as well.
Mourinho's full of things like that, but Klopp generally doesn't do that, and I've seen it being pitched as a penny dropping moment for Klopp that he suddenly realised that Lovren shit. Now that's bonkers. He's seen a player who was out there drowning.
Yeah.
And like, there's times when Lovren like got pulled out wide, even under Rodgers, and times last season where like
he's
not comfortable, he just doesn't know what's happening anymore. And that situation, like, Klopp must have been watching it all develop and going, holy, there's something not right with that player. He just needs to come off. Now, like, I don't think it's a moment where the penny drops and he thinks he's shy.
No.
But it certainly should be a moment where he says, look, that fella just needs a little bit.
I think it's a seminal.
He just needs a few weeks in the 23s or whatever.
I think it's a seminal moment myself. I think a senior squad player getting hauled after 30 minutes and such in Wembley Stadium, everybody in the world looking at it, it's a massive statement to make for one of your senior squad players.
Especially with him thinking he's
captain material.
Like, it's kind of stuff like that you need to go back to your schoolboy days playing football when fellas were whipped off. It's just like, what the fuck?
Or later on, Leinster Senior League, your man is doing a hangover, get him off.
You don't take your first choice centre half off after 20 minutes.
Lovren's biggest weakness would be any other centre half straight. And that's Lovren's biggest weakness is that he backs himself too much.
That's the cover for his insufficiencies.
That's what I'm saying.
Where does he go from?
I want to take that concept in, because we're looking at ahead to this Huddersfield game at the weekend, right? And it does feed in, and that's why I wanted to talk about this meeting, because somebody in the meeting has to turn around and say, Mignolet, you're fucking geek. When any of us has played at any reasonable level of football, and you did have these meetings. I remember when you're on a bad run of form and a bad run of results, I remember getting together in Banger's dressing room and everything, and it'd be like you're saying, okay, what's going on, lads? We fucking train and we go through our drills week in, week out. We're here every second night. We're working on things, blah, 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 blah. And you sit down and you'd have a right go at each other. And I mean, you'd have a right go
at
each other.
I remember when I was 15 playing for Cherry Orchard.
If you were to pick someone in that dressing room, though, to bang a few schools, who could you imagine?
That's a big problem, isn't it? That's a big problem. I mean, Henderson is the club captain, isn't he, at the end of the day? And he is not going to be up there given those kind of talks.
This is leading into this match preview because I can't see any real changes to the team at the weekend. We can get into our previews on the team. But going back to that piece around Henderson, right? I don't know how vocal he is in the dressing room. You hear about people being vocal in the dressing room and stuff like that, but he's not vocal on the pitch. And I don't mean just in terms of you go here and you go there. Whenever something's going on, he's never in the ref's face, in the linesman's face. He's always hovering but never involved in it. He's like the player. You know the way normally with a captain, he's over and he's talking to the ref, whatever, and there's always another player that comes in and backs you up. Never says anything. He's just standing there, which it's sort of add to the presence of the bodies that's around him. He's that player, right? When I'm looking, going back to that bit, who's going to discuss it in the dressing room? If anyone, the only person I can imagine is going to stand up and say, you're allowed to shy, is Lovren himself. But like, he's hardly going to stand up and say, you're allowed to shy into a mirror. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And like, but he should be turning to Mignolet and saying, as fucking pants as I was and I was taken off, you, son, are fucking gack. Like, it's outrageous. Whatever about the mistakes that went on from the throw-in, it just never get past the goalkeeper, right?
Even Mascherano, I would imagine, would have been like that. Gerard, Reina. I mean, that's not so long ago. Alonso, they all would have been able to speak like that and call people out. But Henderson hasn't got the authority from ability-wise or vocally.
Well, you know Suarez would have done it. When Suarez was in that team, he was doing it to fellas on the pitch. Sturridge when he was fit.
Sturridge might be the one to do it.
Well, that was when he was making a contribution on the pitch. Yeah. I think now with his injuries and everything, he's really sort of pulled back from that type side of things.
And I spoke to a few of the lads at the event on Sunday about it, and you told me you're watching it as well. I watched Southampton and West Brom on Saturday night, right? And the game was nil all. I won't mention his name, but you could see it. And I wasn't blatantly watching it, but you could see it. He was bollocking everyone around him, and you could see the type of player that he is, Phil. And you could see what he was wanting.
That's great. But he's going to do really well at Barcelona. Now, back to the players that we have that are at our disposal.
What I'm saying is we haven't got that. And
but surely there's somebody.
Milner,
Johnny, hang on. Come on, let other lads talk.
I think it might be just getting a little bit over exaggerated on how players who've all grown up like in the same environment as like maybe us as kids, like playing football and everything else. Like there was always shouting and screaming. They know how to conduct themselves in a dressing room. They know how to conduct themselves at these crisis fucking meetings. Like that's like.
Let's call it an intervention.
They're not a bunch of pansies. Like they're not going to sit there. They will have a right go.
But they are.
There's one fella who for me should be a prime candidate to be able to do all of this, and that's Emre Can. He's got the demeanour. He's got the look. He's got, you know, he speaks the same first language as the manager. He's been there long enough. He should actually be one of those players, I think, who should be able to step up. But at the same time, his performances on the pitch aren't great, and I think he's got one eye on his next move as well.
So basically, there's
another candidate who falls by the wayside as far as being able to lead that team.
So what you're saying is the whole squad is just flitted with journeymen who are just sort of sitting there, they're moping around, they won't say anything, they won't stand up for the team, they won't like it.
You can try loads of things to make a team complex, but the short and simple of it is there's no leaders in the team.
The point was thrown back. Oh, we had Mascherano, he would have done it. We had Suarez, he would have done it. We had Alonso, he would have done it. And a whole load of good players were named. And we just assume because they're good players that they would have been. There was only one man in that dressing room and all them players, and that was Gerrard. The only person.
What about Carragher?
Carragher was.
The only person, the club captain, the only person who could have took over a dressing room at the time above a manager would have been Gerrard.
Stevie.
Carragher talks about how many conflicts in the dressing room would there be because Reina would be opening his mouth when he shouldn't. But even Gerrard said, let him talk.
Opening his mouth when he should have.
Yeah, but he was speaking.
What the fuck is the point in that? So we want more players in the dressing room that are opening them out when they shouldn't.
We should do more I'm
sure they're all capable of speaking their fucking mind. They're grown men playing football all
the time. Those players, the key bit that we're talking about here is that the players who are mouthy, gobby fuckers, right? The ones that we know that was there, Torres was like that. Reina was like that. Yeah. Suarez was like that. Sturridge at the top of his form, you could see it like that. Sterling used to be one of the ones that's bollocking lads all over the shop on the pitch, right?
Two different.
Gerrard, absolutely, was like that. Agger was like that. We had a team of players who believed in themselves and believed themselves to be winners, right? Going back to your point about journeymen and stuff, how many of those teams how many of those players in the team at this moment in time truly believe that they're winners?
Phil, I don't know. Look, we've a lot of youth.
No,
in the
I'm
team,
asking
a question. There's a lot of young players in the team. What we're essentially missing is not a bunch of people who are going to mouth off in the dressing room. We're just missing that one leader. We're talking about it years now since Gerrard. It's just really the one leader. It's, you know, we don't have a real prime candidate to be the perfect captain.
I don't know how many teams
have the perfect captain. We had one. We are lucky to have a man like Gerrard who was Liverpool fucking through and through.
I don't think he was a great captain. Anyone.
A rising tide lifts all boats.
I certainly think he had a very large influence over people. He's very respected. He was a quality player who, if Henderson start melting off now, you know he's going to be told to shut up because at this present moment in time, Henderson's struggling with his own game. So he's not really one to be telling other people about their games.
I think Henderson, if you think about it, he's kind of almost sort of landed in that spot as the Liverpool captain, and exactly the same in England. But then, as soon as another candidate came along for England,
Harry Kane whipped off.
Not a lot of fuss made about it by him or anyone else. There was no kind of controversy.
Say Kane rubbed his pillow and everything.
I think it would do Henderson a favour in terms of his actual just concentrating on his football. If he had someone come along and took that captaincy off him,
absolutely.
Because I think it's a burden on him both. In terms of what he's got to do in the dressing room and what he's got to do on the pitch.
When Hippie was taken, the captaincy was taken off Hippie, it didn't form approve of the following season. So it can have that effect. Yeah, Henderson seems to be made captain by default, like, a lot. But again, at the same time, you have to look at why did he captain England all through the youth ranks? Why did he captain Sunderland all through the youth ranks? Why did he captain Sunderland? Why was he nominated Liverpool captain?
Because Steamy told him to give him to Henderson. That's what
maybe he just asks.
But there's two different...
There has to be something about him we don't know ourselves. He is surrounded by 21 other players in the squad, and he has been chosen. I'm not saying Henderson should be the captain. I just think he's Liverpool captain. He was a massive, massive, massive club who should have a better candidate. I think Klopp seeing that in Van Dijk, that's why he was so desperate to get him. This was going to be the man that came in and captain.
I think Gomez is more of a leader, personally.
You're not going to give him to a 19-year-old.
Do you know?
I would.
You only have to look at City. See David Silva. If you can't be that big figure, you lead by example.
Well, David Beckham did. He led by example.
Yeah, when you lead by example, the likes of David Silva, the players around him, they'll say that's the standard that we have to be at.
Okay. I think what Andy said about buying an alternative player, like a rising tide does lift all boats, and I think other players will step up then.
If Henderson could even give us that, that would be great.
Okay, let's move on directly to this match with Huddersfield, right? It's we've got Maribor as well next week, and then there's an international break.
No, I think West Ham. Squeeze West Ham in before the break.
Either Pillage or Klopp will be gone at the end of that. Maybe they swap. If Pilic hasn't taken the Everton job at that
stage. We just start doing the World Cup pod now.
If you think about the history of games where we've been playing against new managers recently, like it's obvious that Bilic is going to be gone before we play them. It's obvious.
The only one we got away with was Crystal Palace, and if we didn't have that, we wouldn't have won a game all season.
Yeah, probably.
Looking at the Huddersfield game, lads. I know.
I remember being here five years ago, me and you waiting each other over Mingalay.
It's just terrifying, isn't it?
I remember. Okay. This shit fella now, he's crap.
My biggest fear is that nothing changes, with the exception of Wijnaldum coming in for Milner at the weekend.
Okay? But who has the kids this weekend?
Well, I think Oxlade Chamberlain has taken.
Oh, well, then we'd have him.
He's at home, so it's But no, my biggest fear is that he doesn't change anything. Yeah. And outside of the whole leadership thing, I think. And it's not even to appease the crowds. But you can't keep putting the same 11 on the pitch, getting the same shit results. Don't worry about that, we're not on the video. Getting the same shit results and then just think something is magically going right.
But we're not getting the exactly the same shit results. Okay. We had a few problems pre Maribor without like that we couldn't put away chances and blah blah. And that seemed to be our chance, and then our issues. And then we were having like little mistakes at the back that were leading to a goal, and you know, drawing a lot of games that we were more on the side of winning, bigger chance we would have won. Sunday in a way was a bit of an anomaly, and I felt terrible about it, but it has, at the same time, it has been blown out of all proportions. You know what I mean? Like it was early goals. It was freak errors. Like, you know, they weren't even just standard Lovren errors. They were enough. Madness.
I haven't seen that header before.
That looked to me like a fella who had his whose head was split open, who was afraid of his life. Like what? I think he was locked, yeah. So that was just crazy. The first goal, I don't know whether I've ever seen somebody throw a ball in and two touches later
it's over the top.
Yeah, unless they've launched the ball in or something like that. Mm. It was fucking crazy how you could just throw a ball over someone's back and they turn around, they don't know what's going on. Yeah. Fucking hell. And then like he scuffs the fucking goal past their goalkeeper.
We were sitting here watching the Maribor game and they all switched off defensively once, and you said they wouldn't do that during now in the Premier League when they're all switched on. They did a heap of times.
And this is what I'm talking about. I don't think we've done that again. I don't think Lovren has done that against the big side before. I think Liverpool intend to be, under Klopp especially, under anyone really, they tend to be a bit better against the top teams. They defend better, they're switched on, they're more communication, they're more organised at the back. Look, they were fucking, it was a freak goal.
Yeah,
okay?
But have you watched that?
Don't get me wrong.
Lovren tries to play off, so Kane runs in, but Lovren goes, Mignolet might get that. But if you look at that goal back, when Kane goes around Lovren, Lovren goes, oh Jesus, he didn't make it, I'm going to have to. Then he only tries to recover.
Yeah, I still think Kane out of rest.
There's a couple of occasions.
It was
where
a comedy of errors.
There's a few times where Lovren makes mistakes and the player in behind him doesn't read them.
Yeah.
I mean, if I see that player's not getting it, I'm going, better move actually. Be a good
the
idea.
Problem is, in
and
behind him is
Mignolet, he's not switched on. Look, if it was me, I'd bomb the bollocks out of Mignolet and Lovren. Not because I hate Lovren,
You don't, in fairness. You've given him more chances than anybody else in the world.
I don't think the mistakes he made at the weekend were status quo type mistakes, but I still think he's a man who's very fragile, who's just mentally just fucked at the moment, just needs to be out of the team.
He shouldn't be playing.
We don't have a great alternative in Clavin to come in, or whoever he decides to do, or Gomez and play Trent. We've a lot of youth there at the back then, you know, Moreno, like, but something has to be done.
But there's more than just Lovren. Right, the focus all this week has been Lovren, yeah. Right, there's been, I still don't think there's been enough focus on Mignolet, because Lovren has gone at 30 minutes, right?
Yeah,
and they score another two goals subsequent to him going off the pitch.
Yeah,
we're 2-1 going in. If we hold out for that at half time, we're 2-1 going in, and it's a completely different complexion.
I think you've got a point. The third goal that we concede is the worst, and it's the worst for one reason only, and that's because we, after what had gone on before it, and Lovren getting hooked and being back in the game essentially at 2-1, we just needed to keep our concentration there, and what happens, and Mignolet is definitely a part of that situation. He's got everything in front of him. He can see that the danger is limited. He just needs to give a shout. He needs to maybe open his mouth for the first time this season.
And
basically that's out for a goal kick, and it's half time. You get in the dressing room, you have an entirely different conversation. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not saying we would have come back, because by the way, I can't remember the last time we come back from two goals down. So it would have been an absolute minor miracle to come back.
Dortmund, Lovren got
back. to come back from two down. But basically, you know, and that probably was, yeah. So and that's how long ago it was. But for me, so back to the team on Saturday, Mignolet and Lovren for me have to be left out for one reason and one reason only. And by the way, I do want to see Mignolet on Saturday, and that's sat up in the main stand. That's the only place I want to see him, because I think Karius needs to be starting. I think Ward needs to be on the bench. I think Mignolet needs to be bombed. Not 100%, as in, you know, maybe he does still hang around the club for a few more
just
weeks or whatever. But anyway, just I'm going on one here a little bit. But basically, for one reason only, on Saturday, I just think the crowd will get incredibly negative if those two lads are on the pitch at the first sign of a mistake.
Come here, let me just,
the first sign of something going wrong, it's gonna just spiral, I think. And I think you have to go with something a bit different. For me, you put Gomez in at centre back alongside Matip, maybe put Trent in at right back, and I think the one thing we can't lay any blame on is Moreno's performance at the weekend.
Well, so you can if you're Matt. We came across a few of them who was like it was his fault for all the goals.
So basically that would be my back four and the keeper on Saturday. My main concern around that being the crowd, basically.
Mm-hmm. Can I just say something there, what you said, Phil, about, oh, listen, if we had just done this and get in a half-time or two. And now we're hearing that bollocks talk fucking ages now. Like, about City, the City match, oh, we just could have got an early goal. We're beating 5-0. We're beating 4-1 on Sunday. We were absolute pony. The football is all ifs, buts, and ands, and tiny margins.
Games change.
I know they do. And tiny margins.
Hang on. We've talked, we've advantage of those tiny margins. I'll tell you why I completely refute what you just said there, right? At the last game of the season, when we had to beat Middlesbrough at home in the league to secure Champions League football, right? We had a pony first half. And right terrible. At the death of the first half, Wijnaldum buries one into the back of the net, right? If we go in at nil all there, the whole second half complexion is nervy and it's on edge the whole lot. We bury one in, we come back out, and it's at that half-time goal. So many times.
See, but come here,
if you get a goal at half-time, it just completely changes everything that goes on.
I disagree.
Not the way we blow teams away in those big games, 3-0. That's because we're liquid. Yeah, we're liquid.
So what happened?
We blow teams away in 20 minutes.
So what happened at Watford this year? Was that just fine margins where it was 3-0?
What I'm saying is, it was because they scored a goal that was offside.
But that's the fine margin you're talking about.
Hang on. You're confirming the point I've just made.
Yeah.
No, you're confirming you're wrong.
I'm not.
Yes, I am.
I'm not. You just said the good teams always make those moments happen.
Yeah, Watford are a good team now, really.
So Spurs? Watford are having their best seasons in about 25 years.
So we shouldn't have. Draw was a good result to Watford. You're telling me
at this moment in time, a draw away was a good result to Watford.
Fucking mongos. Talking bollocks.
It's getting now. For fuck's sake, please.
I think we do need a strike.
If only the debating on Monday between the team would have been this strong. I seriously doubt it was.
Can I have a day off?
Do you know what I mean?
Moving away from the defence, because is there an argument? I watched Grujic play for the 23s the other night, right? I watched Ings play for the 23s.
He's playing for the 23s.
He was playing for the 23s, yeah.
He's 46.
They had the guy Grabar.
This was Monday, yeah. Was it? How are you even sort of watching anything LFC related?
No, I was watching Jan Janssen TV.
There was nothing else on. Right? I was waiting for Maiden Chelsea to come on, so the game was on, so I was watching it, right? But looking at I watched Grujic in the game, and he has one thing that none of the rest of our midfielders have. He has that dirty streak in him, right? Mm. And I think there's a red card in him. there might be a red card in him, but there's that niceness about our midfield going back to the idea that we're not hard, we're not ruthless, teams aren't fearing coming to play against Chan and Henderson, right? It wouldn't be refreshing to see him say, do you know what, Chan, Henderson, either one of these could be dropped here, because neither of these have been good enough and consistent enough for the whole course of the season, and give the young flit a chance.
Great feed for a big
man. I don't think now is the right time. Like when the media are coming out and talking about normal conversations as crisis talks, when a manager makes a decision like to bring Grujic into the team all of a sudden. That's like a panic decision, a crisis decision. Like, I mean, they make a big deal out of a decision like that. I don't think much needs to happen in the midfield, to be honest with you. I think the changes need to be made at the back. The midfield weren't the culprits of Sunday, that's for certain. Just a normal change. I'd probably like to see Coutinho play deeper in midfield, and I don't know whether he wants to play Chamberlain, give him a chance, or someone out wide. Just to kind of get Coutinho out there and put him in a more influence position. But it's at the back really where the decisions need to be made. And Klopp's decision is a bit more complicated than us sitting on a podcast saying,
agreed.
Well, bomb Mig, everything sorted. There's dynamics to every decision. If he has to think, I do have Mig for the rest of the season here, or at least up until January, and I do have Lovren. I have to manage the situation most appropriately that's going to be best for the team. I actually think it is dropping the two of them. Mig has obviously come out at times and felt aggrieved at the timing of him being left out of the team or things like the Champions League. He can't defend himself right now. He shouldn't always be in shit. It's way below standard. He needs to chat to his missus. She tells him how to play football again. and then Lovren, it's just inexcusable. I mean, he must know. But it's just the alternative to that is kind of bringing in kids and bringing in Clavin. And Klopp just has to make the best fucking decision at the back that's going to suit the team. And I'm not too worried about the midfield. Okay. I'm not too worried about the attackers.
But Andy, can I ask you about the attackers? And I think it's one I want you all to address as well, right? We're saying we're not too worried about the attackers. It's all about the defence and the whole lot, right? Simple fact is, take the Maribor game away, right? And we've got one goal threat. We've got one goal threat in Salah.
Yeah.
Right. Our midfielders aren't pitching in with goals.
Right. Well, unfortunately,
Firmino isn't scoring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Coutinho is off the like scored when he came back when he was trying to prove he still wanted to play for the club.
Yeah.
And since then, he's gone a bit off the boil as well. Oxlade-Chamberlain has no goals and no assists in him.
Ever. He got a goal against Maribor.
Okay. Well, that's his one for the next 2 years, right? Going by his career level record. So I'm looking and I go and you said that you can't show kids in, but if you're looking for goal threats. They're mainly the kids that we're seeing coming through. Yeah, Woodburn is the fella who comes up with, who came up with goals already in the Premier League.
The response to a game like Spurs isn't to do that. That's not when you do it. You can't. We're not that far off,
really, where we... Like, what were you? 4 points? 5 points off?
Four? Three.
3 points off what? Mm-hmm. Well, then, look, what Andy was saying, there's kind of...
There's a bit of a log jam
there. We can jump back into where we need to be and make do until January. But then January, we're not guaranteed to do business either. So
no.
I think Klopp needs to look at the squad now as that's what he has until the end of the season kind of thing, instead of kind of hanging his hopes on bringing people in January. Like what I was saying before the pod, it's completely understandable to bomb Miguel and never play for Liverpool again. That can't happen. I think we can afford to do that.
Yep.
We can afford to do that, but we can't afford to do that with Lauren.
At the moment, we can't afford
it. We've essentially
two centre backs in the club, Lovren and Matip. Yeah. People can say whatever they want. That's what we have, right?
Like, and the other side of it is
Clavin, who's a backup to a backup.
If Clavin is named in the lineup on Saturday, people would be going mad.
Yeah, and Gomez is a 21-year-old kid, and he's going to have mistakes. But I would rather see Gomez making the types of mistakes that Lovren made at the weekend, because he has the potential to learn from that.
Yeah.
And do you know what? I like Gomez, and I kind of watching him against United. Like, he started off a bit slow, and he got a lot better in the game, and he was one of the better players. I do want to see him at centre back. I'm excited about that prospect, but the only problem is we don't have Klein to play right full.
Yeah.
We kind of have to depend on Trent, and you have very young kids there at the back.
I'd put Milner in the right back.
Klein, actually, if you're going to move Gomez in, the time to do that
would be when you have a fit Klein. Or I don't know, maybe play Milner right back.
Yeah, that's always the
possibility.
And then
like
Milner stays in the team, because you can't really fault him too much since he's kind of got back in the team. So maybe play Milner right back and Mil Gomez into the middle with Matip.
38.
I think we might be all right then. And then the midfield. Like, I'm not bothered about it, but I think they'll do okay against them with the midfield that we have available to us, or the forward line we have available to us. No matter who kind of plays.
I definitely see Phil's point in bringing Grudge in anyway, because does give you something different in the midfield. But I think making wholesale changes.
Grujic, he's the best pre-season player I've ever seen. He's brilliant.
Nearly as good as Aspas.
Is there an argument to bring Lovren back in and keep playing with Matip because it's all we have and just keep hoping they get our shit together?
No, actually, I don't, because we've seen enough evidence. It's not like, you know, the odd mistake or whatever.
It's a cocktail of fucking madness.
There's a fairly big body of evidence there, and we know the situation. The problem we're in now, and everyone's making shouts about, you know, who should be coming in and what. We're kind of relying on second, third choice players, and it's not a great place to be in. Sort of 9 games into a season or whatever. It's kind of some of it smacks a little bit of desperation. So you do wonder whether Klopp will try and persevere with some of these characters and maybe make 2 or 3 changes. Personally, I think he would be mad not to sort of take those main two out the firing line for Saturday and maybe reintegrate Lovren back straight away for the Maribor game, because in theory we've just beaten them 7-0 away. You know, we really shouldn't be under anywhere near.
Mary, you've been a season ticket holder for don't know how many fucking years or whatever. Do you think there would really be an adverse reaction from the fans if this two of them started? Yeah, honestly, I do.
I think the atmosphere in there would be really bad from
the
start.
Bad when they start, Neil. It's bad now when they start.
The thing about these games against the likes of the Huddersfields and the Brightons and the Stokes and the West Brom, it can be very difficult. The crowd just don't get it's kind of like it's up to the players to get the crowd going.
Yeah.
Whereas for the big games, it tends to be the other way around. If people start making, you know, stinking errors all around the
half
pitch,
an hour in, it's nil all.
And it's nil all. It will be.
So you think if the mood would be ship before the match started if them two are on the team sheet?
100%.
I think the way modern football has evolved now, like, the price to go and see a game, it's quite expensive now. Fans' expectations are a lot higher now because they're shelling out serious fucking money to go and watch this. So they feel like the club owes them a little bit more than maybe back in the day when they went.
I think that's okay, but they are partnered with big money, and you're being entertained as well, it's an entertainment club,
and that football team giving you something back for your money. And I suppose, like, it's very easy to slip into that mood when you're in the pub before the game, you're traveling the game, you're saying to your mates, oh, you know, Lovren's gonna do this, Lovren's gonna do that, and then all of a sudden Lover and Amelia are doing exactly what you said in the car on the way to the game, exactly what you said in the pub. You're gonna feel pissed off. So Ray is dead right. The two of them just need to be taken out of the team for the good of everyone, for the good of themselves, good of the fans, for Klopp to just reevaluate everything.
Brexit, a whole of fucking lap.
Like what Andy said, I don't care how much Lovren's on $100,000 a week. I don't envy the bloke because I was in the ground for that Sevilla game, and as soon as he takes a bad touch, you know the players can hear them because the shit they're saying. And these are supposed to be our supporters.
Can I say, Huddersfield come off the back of beating United last week.
They're going to be right up for this.
David Wagner, the ex. What's it?
Was he an X Factor?
Yeah.
Oh, is that your mother? She's gorgeous.
No, Wagner, no. That's Mr. Warner.
No, Wagner's your man that sings the rap songs on Twitter for a score.
Is it?
Yeah. If you send him a score.
It's not Wagner.
Graffiti on the wall. Wagner.
Look, Wagner's had an incredible run at Huddersfield. He's a manager who's clearly getting massively more points out of the squad that he has at his disposal. Mm-hmm. And he's done brilliant work since he got there.
Did you see his comment today about Klopp? It's pure cinema what's happening at Liverpool.
I know, but the two lads, those two boys go out drinking at the weekend.
They use
the same clothing shops, the works, glasses, to go about with Specsavers. Instead of one getting a one pair for free, they both got the same pair together.
Imagine sitting there,
20 bents in between the two of them there, having a smoke, deciding what's going on the weekend.
They are the prostitutes.
Now, the problem is, right, so looking at this, Wagner, I have no idea who plays for Huddersfield. I've seen, there's names there, and you're like, they're going, Is he not a League Two player?
Tom Ince.
Right, so
Tom Ince real quick. All I heard was to Mince. Who's Mince playing for these days? He's an ex-City player, isn't he?
Tom Huddersfield is called Tom, the biggest Huddersfield player, remember, big tall fella called Boots. He's playing for Huddersfield. He's the best player to play for him.
Did Andy Gordon play for Huddersfield?
He does, yeah, both of them. Anyway, right,
mate of mine lives in Huddersfield, actually.
Yeah, does he? You got out again?
Nah, could be about his arsehole.
Right, looking at it, how dangerous are you? They're very not going to fear us. Because remember the pre-season friendly that we played when he took over Huddersfield, and they were pretty decent, and that was our first
high ball into the box.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you go onto that website, it's just a picture of Liverpool. And Mingley standing in his own filth. Doing a dirty protest on the goalpost.
Andy, do you remember the upper and under on Sunday?
And Carey is there with his
legs. Remember Milner's upper and under? He was trying to employ the tactic. Down the other end, Mingley was jumping around. Oh! Don't do that.
Peter Moore.
I'm sick of that prick as well.
Oh, right. Okay. The Twitter's an interesting place. Thankfully, I'm not on Twitter these days that much, just to do the old plugs.
I'm not on it, but Jan Janssen TV's on it.
Well, come here to me. How big of a fear, Ray, for you is Huddersfield? They come with nothing to lose.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a little bit of that United game, and it was all about character and hard work, and that's all. That's what they're going to be when it comes to the game on Saturday. I haven't seen an awful lot of them other than that game on Saturday. They obviously didn't they go away and they beat Palace was
they're
the first game of the season 3-0 as well. Like they've strung together a decent set of results, and. It'll all hinge on the first goal.
Yeah.
Because if they get the first goal, then they just need, you know, they know they just sit back, probably will get another chance or two as the game progresses, and the crowd will be on our back. Mm. On the flip side, I think if we get the first goal, then this whole sort of fear of the negativity in the crowd, I think the crowd will give them a massive lift.
Wasn't our whole game plan against United to allow them have possession, soak it up and take your chances? Is that not exactly what you need to do against Liverpool?
Yeah, it is.
Another way, if they get a corner, they're not long ball merchants, so they do play a bit, they have got, but they beat United by just letting them have the ball.
That's the best a lot of teams do these days, though, isn't it? I mean, yeah. we couldn't do it.
These are the teams we've struggled against, so...
Yeah,
okay, the only thing is, the way he's played, he hasn't been... He's gone to play against teams. Even against United, he went out and played against them. And he wasn't prepared to sit back and just park a bus and you know, try to rob
them. He let them have possession. I think he had 70% possession or something like that.
In the same way as we've sat back in a few games, say against Arsenal or whatever, and looked to quickly counter against them, that's exactly what he was doing, and it seemed to work very well against them. Looking at where we're going with this, is that, like, I suppose our confidence is just so low, you know, the fear is just sitting there that, again, it's a match at Anfield. If he comes and just sits there, eventually we give up a guilt edge chance.
The one shining light is Salah. Well, not the one shining light, but the brightest shining light is Salah at the minute. I mean, he's 8 goals so far. So if you think somebody is going to pull us through this pox of his session we're on at the minute, he's the man. Get him on the ball as much as you can. Like we were saying earlier about Coutinho. Coutinho isn't good enough, and I don't really ever will be, to carry the team. He's not. Salah is carrying the team effectively at the minute in Mane's absence.
Yeah. I mean, just on Coutinho, I mean, that was a fantastic save by Lloris at the weekend, wasn't it? I mean, he should have. I mean, you know.
I've heard people doubt Lloris over the course of, like, seasons. But there's a reason why he has won the top save percentages in the
Champions League.
He's a Champions League goalie. He's a top level goalkeeper, right? He might be the best in the world, but if you're looking at the top 10, he's right up there for me.
His strengths massively outweigh his flaws.
He's absolutely good enough. You know, I mean,
yeah. And he's beautiful.
I'm not looking for Liverpool to have De Gea. I just want them to have a thick goalkeeper that's good enough.
That's good.
Just a goalkeeper.
Yeah, and Lloris fits that.
Have they still got Vorm as well as their number two?
Yeah. I thought he left.
No, he's playing tonight.
He's saying, in their game of Charles now.
I mean, the teams.
Grey Worm.
The teams you would imagine.
No, I'm just going.
The team's confidence must be in their shoes, like, you know what I mean, at the moment. But they could end up with a bit of an angry reaction as well. Mm. I mean, they were fairly humiliated.
Very humiliated.
Yeah, especially
Wembley. I mean, things did
go against them. You know, the timing of the goals, especially the one just before half time. But at the same time, they must have felt very low. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm the only Liverpool fan who felt like that, like since the Stoke game and everything. And so I'm sure they felt so. There could be a good response. You know what I mean? There could be an angry response. They could be well up for it. I mean, I think they owe that to the fans anyway. If we don't see a response from them, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say like Klopp has lost his dressing room or anything like that, but I would certainly think that they've lost a bit of belief in him.
I just want to point out to everyone who was giving me jip just before the end of last season about how good Mignolet was and how good he is. Stick it up your bollocks. It's November, lads, and he's going to be fucking dropped like I said he would,
Does a Liverpool fan exist out there that actually thinks he's a good goalkeeper?
We're all singing his praises, lads.
Andy?
No, we sung his praises. We did. We said he's recovered well and he's playing well and all that. I mean, what's not... Why wouldn't you say that's stupid not to compliment
this is a weird thing to say. My biggest worry is that on Saturday that he does play the two boys and we miraculously turn a corner and then it's 3 or 4 weeks before
it's not, Sean, what happens is it's like when Hodgson was in charge and we were just waiting, we just knew the inevitable was going to happen, right? It's a bit like when Skirtle was there in his last season. It's like when Johnson was there in his last season. You just know the inevitable is going to happen and you just want somebody to put it down.
Just to respond to your point there about turning, the worst thing you can imagine is they turn a corner and everything else. Yeah. We're lucky in the sense that Klopp has already identified that Mig was not his, you know, favourite goalkeeper. He kept him there, gave him a new contract, but he brought in Karius to replace him. That was the plan, all right? And it still is the plan, I'd say. And he tried to put Simon van Dijk to possibly replace Lovren. I'd imagine it was to replace Lovren in that position at the back. So he knows it's there. Like, even if they do turn a corner, it's in our interest that they turn a corner and get some results together, because he will still try and buy van Dijk in January. And he will still try and get Karius into the team. Look, Karius playing in the Champions League is the step towards getting him into the team.
But isn't it the time now that basically, you know, he's got the perfect opportunity? He fluffed his lines last season.
Yes.
Karius fluffed his lines last season. He's got the perfect opportunity now. We already know he's going to play, there's three more Champions League games. It's a perfect time now for him to give him this run of 10 games, 15 games, whatever it is.
Give him the amber.
Just give him that run of games now because you've paid the money for him when you bought him. He's had the one opportunity. You took him out the limelight for a while. Let's just give him that second chance now. And if it doesn't work, then we have to move on and buy another. You have to buy another keeper.
It's as we said on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
We're the only club, only a club that aspires to be a top level club, that when we have a bad player that doesn't work out, we persist with him season after season after season. Other clubs just get rid of them.
Yeah.
Other clubs like, United or Chelsea or City that have a lot of money to just...
And even Arsenal.
City brought in a goalkeeper last year, didn't do well, just fucked him out. The other teams can afford to just spunk.
But Arsenal, for all the people who malign Arsenal the whole lot, Wenger went through, he had Chesney, he had Fabianski, he went through Ospina, he went out and signed Ospina, and the following season wasn't good enough, went out and then signed Cech. Yes. And now they have a goalkeeper. You can't. The goalkeeping position is the one position on the team you cannot afford to gamble on.
I think Klopp bought Karius with the plan that he would be. I don't disagree.
But
you had a lot of belief in Karius. You thought you rated him as a good goalkeeper.
Yeah, but I think we destroyed him last season.
Yeah, so I don't think you cut your losses. I mean, you have to be a hard, heartless bastard.
I'll tell you why I think he's dead in the water, right? You saw the reaction to when people mentioned his name on Sunday.
Yeah.
straight away, half it's the Liverpool crowd are already the target's already in his back. So if he has any way of a dodgy start, going back to your point, Ray, right? Okay. If he has, in the same way, if Mignolet comes out and has a dodgy start on at the weekend, if Karius comes out and has any way of a dodgy start at the weekend, they're on his back. The only one that doesn't have that sitting on him at this moment in time is Danny Ward.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying that's the answer, but I'm saying the problem for a goalkeeper in Karius's position is because he wasn't given the run last season when he needed to bring him back to give him that run again to say, do you know what, he is the future. So I needed to take him out of the limelight because he made a couple of mistakes around the Christmas time, but he's going back in because he is my number one, because that's what Klopp tried to do at the start of the season. I'm on record of saying that for a while.
Can I just on the Ward, because there's a lot of shouts for Ward, isn't there? I think there was a poll on the Echo today, and
it's fabulous.
And Ward, I think, came out as the sort of overwhelming choice for going in goals on Saturday. It's back to sort of the point I made there just a little while ago. Like we're grasping at like third choice scenarios, which we shouldn't really be in a position. Like we put ourselves in a really bad position. If he really was the real deal, surely he would have been. I know he's been rolled out for the League Cup game. But like we're in that situation now where we're kind of grasping at straws a little bit.
We always do that as fans, and I've seen a lot of people calling for, oh, we really, really miss Lallana. You would have never got someone saying that. Yeah. Had we played, like, if we had been playing well, once we've done that business in the summer, like with Salah coming in and everything, and Coutinho staying, everybody's the first name to go when everybody's lips was Lallana. Mm. And now,
there's this phenomenon in football, as in other sports as well. So certain players, individuals, they suddenly become a lot better
when
they're injured, like, or when they're not getting a game, or when they've gone out on loan. But that's just human nature, because we're so fed up with what we see on the pitch that we just resort to any alternative.
The solution is always what's not available.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, fucking, I don't know, I wouldn't be against Tron Ward, and he's been impressive the couple of games he's played.
But when you look at Ward is the reason Huddersfield in the Premier League.
But I think I agree with you said too, Phil, about kind of we're putting ourselves in a position where kind of the lesser lights or the younger lads are coming in, so we're expecting them to overachieve or play above their proper capabilities at this young age, so we could be destroying them as well.
But the only thing is, Neil, the thing about Ward being a younger player is the same age as Karius. Yeah, Karius gets the.
I wasn't talking about Ward specifically. We're talking about the likes of Gomez that could destroy them too.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. I'm just saying, you know, if at this moment in time, everything we've done with the players that are likely to play at the weekend hasn't worked.
Yeah.
At sometimes you have to do. You can't just make one change or two changes. At sometimes you're going to have to do three changes, just to freshen it up, just to bring, to take away the bit that we talked about, the lack of confidence, that dour sense that's on the player, that's fallen onto the players now. Since the first international break, since we've come back from that first, before that international break, we're flying. We beat Arsenal, we go into the international break, and we're thinking to ourselves, yeah, you know, the Watford thing was one that we learned the lesson from, and we've gone on and we've talked two teams. Since then, we have stumbled and fallen, and we've scraped a couple of wins, and that's it. And we are very fortunate to only be 3 points off fourth place at this moment in time, but we are 12 points off the top of the table. If you want to look at the difference,
so that's
between
the gap
where we are,
and how many games played, is it 8 or 9?
9.
As it stands, City are going to win the league at an outrageous points tally and goal difference.
Maybe it'd probably
be the wrong season to actually have your best season.
I'm just trying to say, in we say to ourselves, we're only 3 points off fourth.
Yeah,
but then, like, given that we were thinking, maybe we have
there's a bunch of teams there between, but you know, those 3 points, it's got very condensed between sort of fourth and eighth and ninth or whatever.
With the way our form is running, it could easily that gap could grow quick. You know what, like what Phil was, we are stuttering all over the shop. But I think mad that we're still top of a fucking Champions League group.
But I think the biggest
how quick that changed.
Yeah,
that was just one game.
The biggest concern here, though, we're not just we're really, really majoring on the defence, because it's that mind boggling that it's going on. But the midfield's not working very well. Up top, not working particularly well. But the thing is, like, there's a lot of things that are broken. Do you know what I mean? And there's plenty of shouts out there now for, you know, Firmino to be sort of put to one side for a game or two, give Solanke a go, give Sturridge a go. So, like, there's just this, it feels like there's a lot of things that need to be addressed.
Christmas.
Well, if this was Feeney, you'd just delete the save file and start the next season.
We need the DeLorean. We need the DeLorean. We need to go back to Blackpool, right? And we need to get back.
Not go to Blackpool.
We need to shoot John Cross on the spot.
need to get Ian Air back.
The midfield, right, Ray? Like the midfield and the top, it's not working quite well, but they're blowing hot and cold. They're having decent games and they're having bad games, and it's same with up top, but the back stinks, you know. And that's
the back normally stinks. So, Andy,
after that joyous trek through the week's match ahead of us, Sean, what's your prediction for the weekend?
5-0 Liverpool.
Okay, excellent. Ray,
do I have to give a prediction?
Oh, you do, God. Yeah, come on.
1-1.
That'll be Downer, Mac Downer.
I know.
That Seriously, McDonald's will bring out a new burger.
No, I had a little look at the odds today because I know the bookies' minds work. Gosh. They'll still have us down as massive favourites. Mm. And Huddersfield are 14-1 to win on Saturday. And I would say the likes of United fans, Arsenal fans, everyone will be lumping on that. Yeah.
And they could be 14-1 on by the time kickoff comes around. There could be that much money going on. Nilo.
I expect us to win 2-0.
Okay, that's great. Thanks for getting there.
You're processed,
Jesus, it's nearly next week's part of this, right? Andy.
Only Liverpool could win a midweek game away in Europe 7-0 and then follow that up with a defeat of 4-1, you know, against a team that we've not really struggled with in recent years and just totally blow our beans. So, I think like Liverpool have every possibility they could turn around, have an angry response, have a good response, and go out and win the game fairly convincingly. So I'm going to say they're going to win 4-1.
I reckon we are going. I said I thought we'd beat Spurs at the weekend. I think we win this match. Unfortunately, I do think we win the match. I think it'll be something like 3-2. I think it's going to be a pony match. I think it's going to be one of those ones where you're just scratching your head on the side. This was so handy, and then we've done mad shit again at the back. No matter who plays, we just mad shit at the back. So I think there'll be a Mignolet moment, there'll be a Lovren moment. But
hopefully he's up in the stands.
No, but I think we get away with
it. Like cradling each other.
I think the only change to the side that was beaten by Spurs at the weekend is Milner for Wijnaldum. I think everyone else starts. And they all get to hug each other and wave at the cup before the game.
Oh, they run down the cup.
Hope that new mail stand is flame retardant.
Mail bomb retardant.
I swear to God, the place will be
more. Right, go on. Any tripper shots? Anyone? I was looking online. I'm exhausted at this stage.
Imara wanted to talk about Keita being sent off again.
Did you get sent off again?
Yeah.
Tonight?
Isn't it amazing how much interest people are taking in Keita playing for Leipzig?
Well, he's our man, isn't he?
He's not even
going to Cyprus. I can guarantee it. Unless we're in Champions League, there's a ghetto clause somewhere.
100%. Surely to God.
Met him in Euro Disney, we did.
What? Oh, we could. Sean, we had a club who took fucking Van Dijk to play in the Waltzers in Blackpool.
Yeah, well, we've announced that he's signed.
Pictures of Emerge Keita in Euro Disney.
Yeah.
Did you not tell me that as well, or did you look at the same group?
I heard Keita was sent off, yeah.
All right, so there's a theory there that like he just wants out there now and wants to come to us in January. So can I propose a situation? Would you take it? Okay. Coutinho to go to Barca for whatever the rumour fee is, and already starting off acting the bollocks again with low bids or low rumoured bids. But if Coutinho went and we got Keita and Van Dijk in January, would you do that?
Can I say something?
If Keita
I think Coutinho goes to PSG, and I've been convinced about this since back. I think Coutinho ends up in PSG. I don't think he goes to Barcelona. I think Barcelona burnt our bridges with us, right? And I think PSG will come in and put the money on the table and put the wages in front of him, and he'll go there.
I think that's an
attractive proposition.
The only thing is they spent a lot of money, and they've pre-spent a lot of money as well.
To answer
they don't
place,
care.
Pre-spent money is the maddest thing ever.
I would take that.
The scenario that I would take actually would be if we could prize a bit of cash out to Juventus for Chan in January and bin him off and get and use that money for Keita.
Swap him for Sami Khedira.
Yeah.
get the older version of Emre Can, the more experienced one.
So maybe
he's a winner.
Maybe Keita is that crazy that he just gets sent off loads of times. But I think he could be thrown.
What was his discipline like last season,
Phil? Who, Keita?
Yeah,
it's very good.
Punctuality.
In his head, he seems to be gone from Leipzig, and it's like, yeah, well, you made me stay here, so yeah, I'm going to skip loads of games.
Unfortunately, it looks like they'll probably get out the Champions League group. That would be, if they didn't get out that group, that might give us a bit more of a.
When I was watching him, it was the same. He was diving in everywhere, and he was like, I'm going to do something deadly now.
If their fans are looking at him just basically
go mental, imagine just running around the pitch
with a YNWA tattoo.
But he was sent off on international duty. I don't know whether there was much in it. The footage of it wasn't great, but it looked to me that he swung his furthest hand around and shrugged the player. So that he's not trying to get out of playing his international football. If he's thrown games and costing results, their fans might get pissed off on him and be in favour of that. Mm.
Teabagging fellas, nobody.
Teabagging fellas.
I'll throw a question out there. Seeing
right, this has come in from Tommy in Huddersfield.
No, just given the events on Sunday, I just wanted to go around and see what everyone's favourite moment was from the event on Sunday. Favourite moments from Sunday.
I'm afraid everyone's going to have the same one.
My favourite moment was when your man pulled Steve up for eating chips and watching the
I'm very, very hazy on Sunday.
Really, dear?
Very hazy, yeah.
Man, at one stage you said, I've had 15 points and I only got a score with me.
I had 15 points, yeah. I'm coming in a tenner in my pocket. I'm 4 Davy Fairclough books.
My favourite moment, aside from that, was just watching Davy Fairclough's face at various moments up when he was up on stage.
Another one of my favourite high points was Phil saying to me, Neil, I'm going to fucking burst you if you don't shut up.
That's just standard form at this stage. Andy, what was one of your highlights?
Easily Steve-O and Neil getting caned as well up from the top. And Neil says, I'm getting paid for this shit.
You can have an opinion, but I'm getting paid for mine.
And then your man shouted down, buy a new leg. Yeah, I'll give his name.
I'm fucking, yeah, do that. I'm disabled. I have a team of wheelchairs outside this gap in 20 minutes. Do you know what my low point was? Neil, will you stand out there in the corner and mind the fire escape? That was an actual job given to me. Neil, keep an eye on the fire escape.
It was actually. Sean, what was your favourite moment of the day?
It's probably the Neil one, yeah.
Did he say that to me again? Yeah.
The fucking prick.
I loved running around the crowd and asking them questions. And when Steve, I thought I was going to wrap up, and I just took the mic and ran off. I got more questions asked.
The funniest
and it got gradually anger. There was more anger coming out.
About 5 minutes before the game kicked off, Phil basically told him what was going to happen. And Mignolet made a bollocks fit, and I turned around, looked at Phil, and he was like, just.
I can't believe it.
And then everyone was giving Henderson pelters, and he made his first forward pass of the season, and they're all like, see Henderson, did you see that for a pass?
It got fairly hairy, didn't it?
It was a great pass. Yeah.
First forward pass of the game, though.
The goal, I was quite shocked that he usually needs a good 4 or 5 chances, doesn't he, Salah? And he just banged it in.
He took the keeper by surprise, kind of scuffing it like that, and bobbled it out.
It was great, though.
He's been a skill, I believe.
More than him.
So your highlight was definitely.
It was a great day. And the result obviously put a dampener on it, and it got a lot of people very vocal at various points, half time and full time. But Davy Fairclough was a gent, wasn't he?
He was
a legend, in more senses than one.
Absolutely. It was a great day. For me, it started off on the Lewis on the way down.
With
a
lullaby.
A homeless girl leaned up against my shoulder because she said, said it was real warm and she was freezing.
That's you can't be laughing at that shit.
Yeah, she was going through your wallet at the time, Andy.
That's how I felt good about that I was out there making a homeless person warm. And then I was walking down James Street
throw your jacket in a skip.
And there was already people before Stoutland's open, there was already people outside. Actually, no, before that I went into a shop to get a coffee and there was a fella buying his marker. Day Fair Club to sign his jerseys.
And I walked down to, I was saying, oh, he must be going to the event. So I walked all the way down to Stoughton's behind him, and there he was, like, the doors were still locked up and he was outside queuing. Then a few more people came. So it was, like, this was mad early. Like, this before, Phil was still in bed at this stage.
No, it wasn't. No. I was up from 6:30.
Getting sick.
I was out for Steve. I was there. They were all like, oh, yeah, we'll get there early. You don't want to get there early.
Well, I was there.
So
early
I was there.
Enough.
I think it was, what time did you get there?
About 20 past one. Just 40 hours.
I was there. People. I was outside there at 12:30 or 12 even. And went in. And it was good to go just kind of see everything building. Like a lot of people coming. A lot of people went into that bar.
Bundled into that bar,
you know, and there seemed to be a bit of excitement about it. Then all the flags went up, so it was good to see the room coming together. Yeah. Fairclough arriving a lot taller in real life. I always kind of pictured from the video footage.
I looked it up. He's
6 foot. Steve-O as well, didn't he? Wasn't he?
I'm getting the Steve-O because he does deserve a good
bit of
praise. But
even though he doesn't, Fairclough
walked in. He was a lot taller than I expected. I actually thought he was like a small player just by the type of goals he scored and the type of runs he made. He just looked like a smaller player, but he was big.
Smaller tellies back then.
It was, the match was obviously shy, but Steve-O was absolutely fucking brilliant. Like, you know, I hope we can do more events like that because it was very good. And like, I mean, not blowing around, it was well run. Fair play to Steve-O how he organised it and got some great questions into Fairclough, and the audience participation was brilliant as well.
It was a great sound. The sound engineering on the day was brilliant.
In fairness to Phil, you were flat out.
The TV wasn't buffering at all, was it?
No, the TV didn't buffer at all.
IPTV.
I heard somebody celebrating a sports goal about 10 minutes before we were seen on the television.
That's true.
That wasn't yet.
For fuck's sake. I was like, what's going on? Bad goal. Ah, oh, yeah, prick.
Really?
Yeah. It was only 2 seconds behind live score.
And that's only 2 minutes behind flash off.
Right, that's the end of the podcast. I'm not going to labour with the outro. Big thanks as ever to Skillzone for doing it. Big thanks to everyone who turned up, of course, at Stoughton's at the weekend. Your trippers tonight were Sean, they were Andy, they were Neil, they were Ray, and of course they were myself, Phil Casey. And lads, please start getting your questions back in because I'm getting bored and I haven't questions to make and stuff up to pretend that there's questions for trippers chats. Good night, God bless, talk to you next week.